This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Retailers are sending out SOS signals. Save our stores. Traditional brick-and-mortar retailers are under siege. Customers are abandoning them, preferring to shop online. Some traditional retailers find themselves sagging under debt, and the number of retailers with distressed credit ratings is now the most since the Great Depression. Venerable old-line retailers like Macy's and JCPenney are shuttering locations, even as online behemoth Amazon has become worth more than the top eight traditional retailers combined. Why is this happening? Why have we fallen out of love with shopping in those consumer palaces known as malls? Can brick-and-mortar stores lure you back? Should shoppers care what happens as long as they're getting what they want, when they want it, at the right price? We talk about that this hour with Dr. Stephen Cox, professor of marketing at the McCall School of Business at Queen's University of Charlotte. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Also in our Spirit Square studio is Katie Peralta, retail and business reporter from the Charlotte Observer. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And with us by phone from London is Tiffany Hogan, senior analyst with Kantar Retail. That's a company that works with retailers around the globe to, and I quote here from the website, to transform the purchase behavior of consumers and shoppers through the use of retail and shopper insights, purchase data tools and analytics, consulting solutions, and retail virtual reality services. Once again, that's from their website. So, Tiffany, what does that mean in English?
What that means in English is actually just that we try to help all of our clients work better with retailers and help them be more profitable.
And your clients are who? Whom?
Our clients can be both retailers and suppliers, but we mainly work with a lot of suppliers, helping them understand retail and what's going on in a lot of the world's top retailers.
Okay. In the 1960s and 70s, if I recall correctly, downtowns and cities in small towns and big towns all over the country were complaining about being abandoned by retail as retail experiences moved to these malls. First, they were uncovered, then they became these covered malls, and they were fairly rudimentary, and now they've become these palaces. The Mall of America comes to mind, and they became larger and larger, and not only places to go to shop, but places that you would go to eat, to go to the movies, and just hang out. Teenagers used to love to go to the mall to see and be seen. So what has happened, Doctor, that suddenly we have fallen out of love with the shop, the live shopping experience?
Well, I think you have to ask the question, what's the value proposition that these malls or these big stores provide? At one time, they provided assortment. They provided some expertise in terms of what you wanted to buy, a place to gather. So they made sense. But today, that's not what millennials are looking for. That's not what the Gen Zs are looking for. They're more insular in the way they buy things. They buy them with their mobile apps. They buy them. They buy things with any online type of a facility. And as a result, what they provided before, that value proposition isn't there for the current generation.
But the shopping experience was part of the lure of malls. For those people who like to shop, sometimes they went and didn't buy anything. They just wanted to see, feel, touch the merchandise, see what was new, what was happening. What happened to that? Has that completely gone away? People don't want to do that anymore?
Well, ask, how do people currently communicate and deal with one another? They deal with everybody on with text, with a variety of other mobile devices. They don't talk to each other face-to-face. My daughter and I, all of a sudden, we get into this texting thing. And why don't we pick up the phone and just call each other? Well, we don't. We text back and forth.
Right.
And I ask her why. She says, well, I can hold three or four conversations at the same time with people all over the place. And so the way we deal with each other has changed. And
But we can talk back. A cashmere sweater cannot. Katie, you are a millennial. I don't know whether you had the shopping bug at one point in your life or not, maybe as a teenager or a younger adult. But, I mean, don't you want to go out and look at a silk blouse before you buy it, as opposed to ordering it online and then sending it back because you don't like it?
I think that goes toward the argument that brick and mortar will never go away, because people do need those actual traditional stores
to try stuff on and maybe make a return in person, have a store associate help them out with sizing, things like that. But the fact that we have more options now with both online shopping via whatever retailer's website or Amazon or what have you, the fact that there are more options just means that maybe you'd be less likely to make that make that purchase of something you usually get at the mall. You know, why would you make the trip if you could just get it easily online? And that's sort of troubling for traditional retailers as well, because they depend on a lot of shoppers making kind of spur of the moment decisions while in the store. And research has shown that you don't make as many of those while you're shopping online. It's a little bit more deliberate.
We've seen malls like Eastland Mall go out of business about 15 years ago or so. We've seen major department stores struggle, merge, close their doors. A lot of smaller stores at South Park have gone out of business. South Park, which is the most successful mall in the region, it's the high dollar mall. Are we witnessing a readjustment of some sort that will work itself out, or is this a sea change from which brick and mortar stores and malls in particular, and I guess the anchor stores in particular, will not recover from?
Speaking specifically about the anchors, I think there might be the argument that maybe they had too many stores at one point. Before Macy's decided to close like over 100 stores last year, they had over 700, which is an enormous amount. And when you consider the fact that they own some of these properties, some which have been not profitable for years, it just makes sense to scale down. And I'm not sure if I see that changing. I would see that probably the trend continuing until they find a nice balance of the number of stores that they actually need and that remain profitable.
And because they own those properties, they were able to hang on longer than perhaps they would have or could have otherwise. Tiffany Hogan, one analyst said that in 2017, this year, it will be a tipping point, because this early in the year, we've already seen significant disruption from in retail from rapid movements to online. In other words, people are moving even more quickly to online shopping versus in the store. You work with retailers around the world. Is this happening everywhere around the world, or is this particular to the U.S.?
No, I think it's definitely more of a global phenomenon. In the U.S., I think it's just it's very rapidly growing right now, and we're kind of, like you're saying, at that tipping point where we're seeing so much acceleration online, and a little bit of deceleration in stores. And kind of to Katie's point, everyone's just looking to balance out, what we call that omni-channel spectrum. How many stores do you need to continue to do that business? It might be less than you needed 10, 20, 15 years ago, however long ago when all these stores had opened. And now that a lot of those sales are actually going online, how do you kind of balance, how do you measure your business and how do you measure success of a store when, it might be doing or helping you do a lot of volume, but it may not be going directly into that store sales. So I think that's just that's the tipping point that we're at in the U.S. right now.
I don't know which one of you to ask this question of, but was this move to online hastened by the recession in any way?
Doctor. I mean, you could suggest that because online prices are usually lower, people were more concerned about money. Mm-hmm. And but I think that it's really been hastened by millennials and Gen X's. I'm sorry, Gen Z's. Because they grew up, there's the old saying, you and I, because I know how old you are as I look, more or less. we're digital immigrants.
Yes.
We're the millennials, Katie here and others are. And the Gen Zs are natives. I mean, they grew up with this stuff. So I think there's just a sea change in the buyer of tomorrow.
Yeah.
And they're just going to move away. And whether we had a recession or not, it's the consumer that is changed.
I think that some of the hangover effects from the recession might be influencing the way that we shop too, because many in my generation were – graduated from high school and college into a really crappy economy. And we took jobs and wages haven't grown that much. So, and on top of that, of course, there's the student debt issue. So perhaps we are a little bit more I don't know, maybe we are a little bit more skeptical about where we shop and how we shop, and maybe that's a good thing in the long run for our own finances.
But yours was the generation that would go out to Abercrombie and Fitch, for instance, and pay $40 for a t-shirt, which I would not do. Period.
I'm not going to try to explain my actions as a 15-year-old.
you had mom and dad's money. That's right.
I did not.
Okay. All right. Tiffany, in this country last year, I'm told it was devastating for lots of retailers. And this year, JCPenney, which is attempting a comeback, has decided to close 130 to 140 locations around the country. Sears, which has been in trouble since I can remember, has been closing stores at an even more rapid clip. They also own Kmart, which is getting smaller. Macy's, still in pretty good shape, but they've been closing unprofitable locations. And then smaller, more specialized retailers like American Apparel went into bankruptcy and closed their stores. H.H. Gregg, the appliance and electronics people, are trying to emerge from bankruptcy by closing locations. Abercrombie and Fitch is downsizing. And The Limited, for whom you used to work, has limited itself right out of business. Was any of this a surprise? Is any of it a surprise? Or are these closings, are they alarming? How would you describe what's going on?
I don't think it's necessarily alarming. I think it is somewhat of a good thing, just based on kind of the nature of the environment that we're in retail today, with everything moving online at a faster clip. You, as I was saying before, you don't really need as many stores. So it's going to be a little bit of a challenge to work through closing these stores, but ultimately I think it's the best decision for most retailers to just kind of level set that store balance, kind of get it back where it makes a little bit more sense to have a store operating. I think even Macy said that the stores they're closing only account for a very small percentage of actual sales that come in. So that kind of gives you an idea of kind of how superfluous some of these stores have become because there were just too many of them. And as far as some of the specialists going out of business and closing down, I think it's honestly the same principle. We're overstored from each retailer's perspective, or each retailer is a little bit overstored probably, as well as over-retailed, I guess, if you will. There's just too many, especially when you look at apparel, women's apparel specialists. There's just so many out there. What's their differentiating factor? What makes you want to shop at Ann Taylor Loft versus Abercrombie & Fitch versus American Eagle? You know, they are slightly different, but what is the real, you know, what's the real brand proposition there that's keeping a different shopper going to one store versus another? So I think we're going to see a few more brands also over the next few years kind of going out of business, scaling down and really changing to kind of make room for what the new consumer really wants to buy.
And here's what I've often worried about. I've thought about this for years, since I was probably in high school. You walk through a shopping mall, you can buy shoes at Belk and Macy's and Dillard's, and I'm going to leave one out, Nordstrom. You certainly buy shoes at Nordstrom Neiman Marcus. Mm-hmm. Then there are like 150 other stores that you can buy shoes in. They're exclusively shoe stores. How do they stay in business, Doctor?
Well, if you look at what's happened to their market caps, in other words, what the investment community thinks they're worth, in the last 10 years, virtually all of them are down about 80%. So they aren't staying in business. They are in business, but, I mean, they aren't doing well. And part of it is a proliferation of stores and choice. So they aren't.
Boy. All right. When we come back, we'll talk some more about this migration to the web to buy things and what that means for not only the stores you shop in, the malls you shop in, but for the economy, because you don't need all these sales associates if you're talking to your computer about buying a pair of shoes. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and H&S Roofing and Gutter Company, providing roofing and gutter services for residential and commercial customers in the Carolinas since 1939. More information at hsroofing.com. And Goodwill Industries of the Southern Piedmont, helping job seekers access the training and support needed to grow their careers, connecting employers with candidates, dedicated to changing lives through the power of work. GoodwillSP.org. Among environmentalists, there is some hand-wringing going on. President Trump's budget cuts funding for regulatory and research-based scientific agencies like the EPA, NASA, and NOAA, and those cuts could eliminate funding for climate change research and impact state programs as well, here and around the country. Some scientists are organizing, but not everyone is on board because they fear over-politicizing their work. So we'll take a look at how this atmosphere is affecting environmental work in North Carolina tomorrow at 9.
I'm Tom Asbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the House Intelligence Committee, the FBI chief, and what we've learned about Russia, Trump, and the home front. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point, coming up at 10, following Charlotte Talks, on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the rise in online shopping today with Dr. Stephen Cox, professor of marketing at McCall School of Business at Queen's University of Charlotte. Katie Peralta writes about all this in the pages of the Charlotte Observer. And Tiffany Hogan is a senior analyst at Kantar Retail, and she's joining us today from London, where it is quite clear to me that they still make great telephones at British Telephone. You sound like you're sitting next to me. I have guests across the street on the telephone sometime, and it sounds like they're calling from Mars. So congratulate British Telephone while you're there.
I will. Thank you.
Many of the stores who are now watching their backs also have an online presence. So does it matter that they're shuttering many of their physical locations? Tiffany?
I think it does matter because it kind of changes the P&L. It changes how they operate a little bit, but I think it also just reflects, again, that shift towards online. They're just following the shopper at the end of the day. The shopper is the one that's changing this industry. It's not coming from retailers. Shoppers wanted to shop online. They wanted to buy it in the store. They wanted to research it in the store, buy it online. However, they are moving through this kind of shopping ecosystem. That's what retailers are reacting to. So if that requires them to shutter more stores, then that's what they're going to do to get back in balance with what that
shopper. But the bottom line is the bottom line. So can't Macy's, if they just go virtual and close out the store in New York City and all the stores around the country, can't they save a heck of a lot of money and therefore also pass those savings on to consumers? Why would they want these stores with all the employees and the lighting and the heating and the displays and the inventory that they have to ship in?
Right, and I think that's kind of getting at the fact that it really is two different business models that they're trying to merge, which makes this very difficult. But also for a brand like Macy's, it really, if you compare walking into Herald Square versus shopping Macy's.com, mm-hmm. while it's a great website, you really don't feel that, quote, like Macy's magic that they're trying to sell to you unless you're in the store. So I think stores, again, become a really big touch point for shoppers with that brand, even though they're not shopping in stores as much. That makes each visit that much more important for Macy's to focus on those stores that are still open and are still profitable. How can they really communicate that brand value and differentiate themselves from a JCPenney, from a Nordstrom, and keep that shopper coming back?
Dr. Cox, when did this migration begin? Can we pinpoint when, like, the first online shopping experience made waves?
In the 90s. Once we started to get availability of the internet, we started to be able to order online, but it really didn't hit until after the year 2000.
Was there an entity, a shopping entity, that really put online shopping on people's radar? Was it Amazon? Was it something else?
Jeff Bezos. Amazon.
Amazon.
No question.
Amazon is not only a retailer, they're an aggregator.
Yes.
So they're letting other people sell in their store too.
Absolutely.
Right.
But what they've been able to do, a lot of what has made Amazon so successful is that they really understand inventory control. They understand logistics. They keep a lot of products in warehouses around the country, but they get stuff to you in a day, 2 days.
Or less. I ordered something from Amazon on Saturday morning and I had it Saturday afternoon.
Wait till it comes in a drone. They've already experimented with that. Mm. So that if you need medicine or something like that, it will come to you within hours, minutes. Mm. Bezos is interesting in that he has said he expects eventually Amazon to be outpaced by somebody else and Amazon to go away.
How?
Well, if you'd asked the guy at Macy's, how are we ever going to have department stores go away, it wouldn't happen.
Well, it could be 3D printing. It could be computer. You make me a shirt, and it's there. I mean, it could be that.
If you watch Star Wars,
yeah,
beam me a shirt, Scotty.
That's right, Star Trek.
Star Trek, sorry. Yeah,
that's what I was referring to. There are still people shopping in malls and in stores, brick-and-mortar stores. Are the people who go there, Katie, from your experience, are they different? Are they looking for something that they can't get online? Is it the experience of being in the store, of being around other people, of wandering down the aisle and just looking at stuff? Is that what they're looking for?
Yes, and going back to the word that Tiffany had mentioned, I really liked that, like the Macy's magic. I think that all retailers are in a way trying to capture that, I don't want to say nostalgia, but brand loyalty, I guess you could say. And focusing specifically on department stores, I guess that's, you know, that's a start. That's one way to look at it. You look at places like Nordstrom and, you know, when we're talking about value proposition, they pride themselves on really good customer service and, you know, helping you find, you know, the exact right size and they help you with alterations and they'll do stuff like, you know, you take back a pair of yoga pants that has a little rip in them and they'll give you a whole new pair sometimes. I mean, that's personal experience, but
well, the legend has it that if you walk into Nordstrom and they don't have an item that you want, but they know somebody else in the mall does, they'll go to them and buy that and bring it to you.
Exactly.
That's the legend. I don't know if that's true or not.
Exactly. And then there are people, for example, when we wrote so much about Belk being sold in 2015, there were some people that wrote in and had stories about when they would go with their daddy to the Belk in Uptown Charlotte, and they would have, you know, just memories of what that means to them. And I think that maybe that could be a generational thing, you know, but it also could be a geographic thing. In the South, modern Southern style resonates with shoppers here a lot more than it might in New York City or something like that. So they try to capitalize on that that brand that means something to people.
Dr. Cox and Tiffany, and I'll begin with Dr. Cox, same question. What do consumers want when they're going to spend their money in a retail environment, whether it's online or in the store? What do they want?
Well, first, we tend to lump consumers as one, but they're not. People buy as individuals. So some people want that experience. Some people want a knowledgeable person to help them. Other people just want to do it on their own. And more we're finding people want to do it on their own. I think Tiffany works with Stitch Fix or something like that, which is it's online, but it's a more custom retailer. And maybe Tiffany would like to talk about that.
Okay. Tiffany?
Sure. Stitch Fix is kind of one of those retail disruptors that we're looking at right now that is kind of trying to be that personalized stylist, that service that you used to get from going into a department store like a Nordstrom or a Macy's that would help you find things. They're doing that for you online and bringing that shopping experience into your home or into your office or wherever it is that you're having that box shipped. So that is one of those kind of new edge retailers that we're seeing disrupt this whole idea of personalization and kind of bringing that shopping experience into the home.
Are millennials attractable? If you're a retailer in a brick-and-mortar store, can you attract them? And if you are going to attract them, what do you have to do to get them to come in as opposed to going to either your website or somebody else's and hit buy?
I think it's understanding what they want. And again, it's hard to lump all millennials in, as Dr. Cox was saying.
Sure.
But if you're looking specifically like at teen retailers, for example, a lot of them are not interested like my quote-unquote older millennial generation was in buying those $40 graphic tees from Abercrombie. Maybe they're more interested in spending their money on like the new iPhone 7 or 11 or whatever we're on right now. And instead of on clothing. So that's why you see the fast fashion popping up and doing so well, like Zara, for instance.
I'm glad you brought up Apple because you can buy an iPhone online. You can buy an iPhone at Verizon. But if you go to the Apple store, it's like a cult. It's never not full of people. Never. I don't care what time it is or what day of the week it is. What's that all about?
Mm.
If I've been to the
it's
Apple.
It's a cult.
I think if we do, we would, yeah.
Yeah. Well, first off, Apple has been a cult for a long time, Apple users. When they got down to 9% market share, they still had this group of people who refused to do anything else but go Apple. And Apple has maintained that even now that they're bigger.
So is there a lesson for other retailers and or manufacturers to learn from Apple, not only about their products but about their stores?
I think they are taking note. I mean, look at Microsoft. Just, I mean, specifically at South Park Mall, those stores kind of look similar to each other.
Very similar.
And there's the virtual games going on and the hands-on activities and the store associates that are very, you know, they'll walk you through product demonstrations and stuff like that. So I think that other retailers are taking note, it seems.
But have you ever gone into the Apple store and said, and looked for a discount?
No.
No. And there's a good reason for that.
They're not going to give you
They're
one.
They're not going to give you one. So if you want an Apple product and you want to go to a retail outlet to see how it works and get some real expertise, you're going to go there. That's their value proposition, is we provide you with all that. And, oh, by the way, we're Apple nerds.
Okay.
you know, and I think it works.
Most men, the legend has it, and Tiffany, you can correct me if I'm wrong because you have an international perspective on this. Most men hate to shop. Women seem to enjoy it, and that's certainly reflected in malls. When you look at the most of the merchandise in the anchor stores, it's geared toward women. Most of the individual stores in the malls are geared toward women. Are women leading the charge to online sales as well? Tiffany.
I guess I don't have any statistics on that, but I would say since they, you know, they are kind of the leading mall shopper, though you could kind of infer they are leading more mobile first. But I would also say, and this is kind of a postulation on my part, that if men hate to shop so much, they might also be gravitating more quickly towards that more mobile first, online first mentality, because, you know, men tell me what do you hate about shopping, usually going into the store and actually doing the physical shopping. If you can do that online on your phone without people kind of breathing down your neck trying to sell you something, I think that's a much stronger proposition for that that category of shopper. So I could see it, you know, both of them I think are probably growing pretty quickly.
Do you know if women are leading the charge to online, Doctor?
I honestly do not know the answer to that question.
Okay.
But let me tell you one, just as kind of an interesting aside. I had some students do a presentation the other day, and I'd never heard of the product MeUndies,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of that. And they have a subscription service.
Yes.
Every month you get a new pair. It never occurred to me that would happen. I looked out in the class and I said, has anybody heard of this? And everybody raised it. Oh, yeah, I use that. And I'm going, now there's a generational difference. But
you don't have to wash them. Every month you get a new pair.
Yeah. I'm not going to go there. I am not going there. But the interesting thing is that's a retail subscription business
mm-hmm.
online,
right.
But somebody else chooses for you what you wear.
Tiffany, you just said something interesting, that people didn't want to go through the hassle of being pressured into buying things. That's why they don't like to go into the store. Is that what's happening in many people's minds, that if a sales associate comes up to you and says, may I help you, that that's pressure?
I think it can be for some shoppers. Some shoppers still do want that kind of that interaction, and I think it, you know, obviously depends on the sales associate, their training, and how they're, you know, they're told to kind of sell throughout the store.
The same thing is happening online. If you go and search for something online, if you go and look for a shirt or a tie or a pair of shoes or an iPhone or something online, it is not only popping up in that store's location, but when you open your browser the next time, there are going to be ads for that product everywhere you look. Mm-hmm. Isn't that as annoying or more so?
I think it is.
Yeah,
kind of.
I think it can be. Go ahead, Katie.
I was going to say, I think sometimes it does seem sort of odd if it's the exact same thing you just bought.
Yeah.
You see it pop up on your Facebook and you're like, I don't need two pairs of this shoe that I just bought. But if it's something like, you know, on Nordstrom's website, they'll have like an aggregator at the bottom of the screen that shows, if you like this, then try
right.
this. And it's
so
not,
it's Amazon.
It's smart. It's yeah. smart technology. And, you know, it's a very creative, not in your face way to kind of cater to consumers' preferences and how they're shopping.
Aside from underwear, are there certain kinds of products or categories of products that seem to lend themselves to being more successfully bought and sold online versus in stores?
I would have said that before I saw things, online stores like Rent the Runway. All of the things, not like MeUndies, but like Stitch Fix, where you get a half a dozen things every month. I think there's almost anything will lend itself. I think the important thing is, and you brought it out, you said, you know, do you not want somebody to come up and say, may I help you? Do you think they mean it? You know, have you ever asked, why is this pair of jeans more expensive than that one? And get the answer, what's the brand name?
Sure.
The retail salespeople oftentimes have no clue. They're not any added value.
Okay. A couple of emails have come in while we've been talking. Eileen says, one of the reasons stores like Belk and Macy's aren't doing as well is because it used to be a pleasant, satisfying experience shopping there. There were knowledgeable and abundant salespeople who knew the merchandise. This is to your point. This is no longer true. It's often hard to find someone to pay for the merchandise. You pay more and you get an exercise in frustration. That's because, in part, people have migrated to online shopping and the stores are cutting back on their employees. Is that right, Katie?
I don't have figures on that, but I would imagine it might be.
Well, Tiffany, would you say that's what's happening? Is this a self-fulfilling prophecy? If you start cutting back because you have to, and there are fewer sales associates to help you, and the turnover in those associates is frequent, and therefore they don't know the merchandise, is that a self-fulfilling prophecy? Are you digging your own grave?
I think you are to an extent, and it really just shows one of the problems that could be easily fixed with stores is that you have associates there, you need them there to operate the store. So why aren't they getting trained better? I think that's a big opportunity for a lot of retailers, as your listener pointed out, is that if they could be a huge hindrance just by not doing anything, but if they could also be a huge benefit to the store if they are additionally helpful to the experience.
We talked a lot about millennials, and the reason we're talking a lot about millennials is the fact that they are the largest generation on the planet, at least in America right now, with $200 billion in spending power every year. They are not brand loyal. They are informed, and they love a bargain. So these people are real influencers in the world of retail. But Jenny emails, it's not just millennials. Most of my friends, well into their 50s and 60s, shop almost exclusively online. As people age and are less able to drive to brick-and-mortar stores, online sales will just increase. Do you agree with that, Doctor?
Oh, I do. My wife is an Amazon Prime and has been an Amazon Prime user. She buys almost everything online.
Wow. And a comment from Twitter, if retailers carried sizes women actually wear in their physical stores, we wouldn't have to shop online as much. Do you know what she's talking about, Katie?
I think I might need a more concrete example, but at the same time, I do kind of get where she's coming from. And it varies retailer to retailer. You know, some it's scaled down, and you might be a 2 somewhere and a 6 somewhere else. So that's why you kind of need to go into the store to figure it out.
Katie Peralta writes about all this as a retail reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Tiffany Hogan's with us from Kantar Retailer in London, and Dr. Stephen Cox from Queens. We're coming right back. For Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Corkscrew Wine Shop and Bar. New location now open at The View in downtown Charlotte near BB&T Ballpark. Full portfolio of wine and beer from all over the world, plus live music. Details at thescrewcrew.com. And Miles McClellan Construction, dedicated to meeting each of their clients' needs when it comes to project performance and its technical requirements. More info about Miles McClellan's approach at mmbuildings.com. Well, after a marathon hearing by the House Intelligence Committee, what have we learned about Russian involvement with the Trump White House and with American politics? They'll be looking into that in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock during On Point with Tom Ashbrook. And we're talking about retail. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org, search for us on Facebook or through Twitter at charlottetalks. And we're coming right back.
All Things Considered on WFAE helps you go beneath the surface of the day's news.
You think of it as, well, if the criminal case is dismissed, then the immigration case should be dismissed. That's not how it works. The EOIR, which is the Executive Office of Immigration Review.
There's more to every story. Listen weekday afternoons from 4 to 6:30 for All Things Considered from NPR News and 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Tiffany Hogan joins us today. She's a senior analyst with Kantar Retail. She's joining us from London. Katie Peralta is a retail and business reporter for the Charlotte Observer. And Dr. Stephen Cox, a professor of marketing at the McCall School of Business at Queen's University of Charlotte. We're all talking about shopping and the changing nature of it, moving from brick and mortar to online. I just said that the millennials are the largest generation, and I was off the air corrected in this. Things are changing fast in this world by Dr. Cox, who says it is Gen Z who is the largest generation, and they are folks who were born from 1996 until today. So they're 18 years old, many of these people.
Yep.
What do they want? Do you have a personality profile on them?
Well, of course, they're very young still, but they tend to be much more practical. Where millennials tended to be follow your dreams, these are people who have grown up after 9/11. They have it. Some of the research shows that 60% of them view success as money, in money terms, where with millennials it was about 44%. Gen Zs are going to start asking the question, is college worth it? Is the investment in college worth going? Gen Zs, by the way, are the people today who are looking at college as to how much it costs and negotiating their tuition.
Wow.
Which, believe it or not, you can do. And because they grew up in an era of immediate information, they can, in fact, figure out very quickly how much tuition costs at all of the different universities. And they can go back to a university and say, look, I think I can get this for X at Winthrop. Can you beat that price for me? And they're doing it. That is not something – did you do that, Katie?
No.
Tiffany?
Very smart. Tiffany?
No.
But I talked to our admissions people, so that's what they're doing.
Well, then how do you do that in an online environment? Because you can go in and negotiate prices. I didn't know this until I saw it happen in front of me. At a department store, you can go in and say, you know, I don't want to pay $18 for this. And they'll give it to you for $16 or $15 or $14. Or, you know, the sale ended 2 days ago, but I have this coupon, and it ended 3 days ago. Can't you honor this? And they will. Mm-hmm. You have to ask.
Yeah.
But how do you do that in an online environment?
Well, the advantage of an online is you have everybody's prices in front of you. So you don't necessarily have to negotiate. They're negotiating against themselves, every one of these stores, because the information is there.
Tiffany, when it comes to apparel, is it somehow easier for retailers to be more relevant in an online world where they don't have to send their own shoppers out to look at merchandise, decide how much they're going to buy, bring it into the individual stores, set up displays, and by the time they get that set up, the trends might have changed or that item may not be as cool because everybody's wearing it. Is it easier to do it in an online environment?
Yeah, I think to a degree it is a little bit easier because you can, kind of as you're alluding to, you can move a little bit quicker online if you don't have a brick-and-mortar operation. Obviously, the elephant in the room of Zara is telling us that it's possible to do with brick-and-mortar stores, but very difficult, and no one else has really managed to quite get to that level of fast fashion with a huge brick-and-mortar chain like they have. But online does make it a little bit easier to both, A, watch for trends, and see how they change more rapidly and then kind of bring that into your site a little bit more quicker without having to have those merchandising minimums that you have to buy for each store. And as you say, having to merchandise it in stores and having extras for that as well. So it does move a little bit more seamlessly online.
Patrick on Twitter brings up an interesting point that I myself have experienced. He goes into brick and mortar stores first and then finds the item online. If he likes it, where prices are cheaper, he buys it online. This has led to a problem for brick-and-mortar retailers, particularly for things, I would imagine, like appliances and electronics and cell phones and things that you want to touch and feel and see actually how they work. But the prices online are cheaper, so you're using the retail stores as a showroom for something you're not going to buy from them. How are retailers dealing with that?
Well, first, do you remember Spiegel Catalog?
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly what Spiegel Catalog did in the 1950s. You would go to the retail store, you would find the product you wanted, and then you would go to Spiegel, and they would ship it to you, and it was cheaper. This is not a new phenomenon. This has been going on for a very long time. Why did Spiegel Catalog, why don't we have that anymore? Why did they go out of – because the retailers – got smarter in terms of logistics, supply chain, and they could provide the product at a reasonable price. And so I just think it's been happening for a long time in different ways.
Well, Best Buy will match online prices. If you can prove that you can get that television for $50 less online, they will match the price. And I'm told Best Buy has also begun to use their stores as showrooms with the anticipation that you will come in, showroom the item, and then they'll order it for you from their supply online.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, they're matching prices. And it used to be match from a local retailer.
Mm-hmm.
That's changing,
changing
because nobody's using, you know, everybody wants to use the internet. It used to be a local ad you had to show. Now you just can show your cell phone with the price on it, and they'll match it. It's worth it for them to make the sale and not lose the customer.
Is that also why it's difficult to shop for certain items like electronics? Because although the actual item may be identical, they give you a different SKU number or model number in each store so that you really can't compare the prices because the Costco version, which is probably identical, has a different number on it. Is that why they do that?
Yeah, that is exactly why they do it. I can also tell you, for instance, Boyle's used to be a big
furniture
store here, and they sold to Virginia and they sold to and what everybody would do is go into their local I'm guilty of this as well, I have to admit. Go into the local furniture store, pick the number off, and send it to Boyle. So what the local furniture stores did is they changed the numbers.
A lot of retailers have been slow to respond to the online onslaught because it's a different business model, and it requires new technology, and it requires a sophisticated inventory system that's set up to interface with your online buying website. But Sears, for instance, which has long had problems, was a catalog store for years. Why aren't they particularly well-positioned to understand catalog sales electronically on a website?
They should be, and, you know, they bought Land's End because Land's End
also
was
a catalog
really
–
But online, mm-hmm. Land's End was excellent at it, and they were looking at a way, but they were never able to execute. Belk has not been able to execute their online. It's just not their business model. It's not their sweet spot. And they've given people like Zappos, for example, or they've given them the lead in developing the technology, and it's really hard to catch up.
Amazon is, as I said at the very beginning of the program, more valuable than the top eight traditional retailers in the United States combined. Is that a bubble or is that real? Is the real valuation based on real numbers or is that because it's like all these dot-com things were in the 90s, overvalued because it's technologically advanced?
Well, in part it's because the...
They're actually selling that much.
Well, yeah, they are selling that much. But it's, you know, if you take a look at the market cap of the, you know, the others that we're talking about here, the, you know, the Macy's and so on, they've all gone down about 80% in the last 10 years. Amazon is up 2,000%. That's one of the reasons that you'll see these market cap differences.
Well, Amazon started as a bookseller, if I recall correctly. You could buy books and CDs and things like that.
Bezos delivered them by under his arm to homes, as a matter of fact. Yes.
Okay. And as a result of that, we have seen the closing of some major big box bookstores like Borders, which I used to love going into. I used to love Borders. They're gone. And several other, B. Dalton is gone because of Amazon. But now Amazon is opening bookstores, brick and mortar bookstores. What's up with that?
Well, they're also opening grocery stores. But in a different, they're using a different model. I know with the grocery stores, what they're trying to do is figure out a way that you can get in and out of the grocery store quickly, that you can buy with your iPhone. There's no checkout counters. So they're trying to figure out a way to make the whole process more efficient.
And Katie, you report that in Charlotte, Amazon has been quietly adding dozens of lockers at area retailers. What are Amazon lockers?
This goes to boost their, and I hate using this word, but omni-channel approach to reaching customers more quickly and efficiently. And this is just, you know, you see these all over the place, and they don't, again, it's quiet because they don't like to talk about employment trends. They don't like to talk about new developments like this. But it's you order online and you have this code or whatever. I've never actually used one. I don't know if it's a code or a key. And it's delivered to a little locker where you can just go pick it up yourself.
Why would you want to do that? The point of buying online is that it's shipped to your door. Why would you want to go to a store and get it out of a locker?
Maybe if you don't want the item sitting on your doorstep for safety reasons or something like that. I mean, there are a host of reasons why people could do them. But I think this is considered an experiment. I don't know if they would say that we're going to permanently put these in all
and
over.
And they're not putting these in the hallways at malls, these lockers. They're putting them in other stores. Is that correct? If I'm a retailer, why do I want an Amazon locker? Because Amazon sells anything that I can sell, Amazon sells. Why would I want their locker in my store?
I would say that any traffic you can get, you are eager to get, even if they're there for some other reason. They want to get customers in any way that they can.
Yeah, and stores have experimented with sort of click and collect, where you go, you order it online, say from a Macy's, but then you go to Macy's and pick it up. You don't have to go, as you suggested earlier,
And so shipping is free because of that?
Well, not only is shipping free.
Yeah, usually click and collect is free. Yeah.
Okay. But the advantage of is you get it immediately. So you don't have to go looking for the sales associate to make your payment. You don't have to do anything else. You can just go pick it up and take it, and you need it today.
Urban Land Magazine reports that this year, construction of new retail space is lagging, and it's been at historical lows since 2010, and that's causing lower vacancy rates at malls, while rents, for some reason, have remained stable. Is that because malls know they have to keep the prices down or the stores are going to close? And demand is greater than supply. Is this good news for brick-and-mortar stores? Is that the silver lining in all this?
I think it depends which one. Depends on the location. If, you know, some of these brick-and-mortar stores or malls kind of further away from a city center like Charlotte maybe aren't as desirable sometimes. Maybe it's sometimes harder to fill those leases.
What are you hearing about the health of malls in Charlotte?
Again, it depends on the mall. I mean, look at South Park. It's one of the busiest in the Southeast. I think the most profitable between D.C. and Atlanta or something like that. But there are other ones like Carolina Place where they have shuttered anchors and there are, you know, smaller individual stores closing for whatever reason. And I think that, you know, look, and then you look at other shopping centers that are building up their presence of these popular stores, like the Park Road Shopping Center has J. Crew now, which you probably would have never guessed would be there 10 years ago. But, you know, as young people, as all people, are kind of gravitating more towards the city center, those places are becoming more valuable.
Why haven't we seen more retail downtown?
I think you will. It's starting to come up eventually, like slowly. You see, and that's why pop-up stores are so popular, and why Center City Partners and groups like that are investing heavily in, you know, making the local guys present and available.
Tiffany, it isn't just online that's siphoning away shoppers from traditional mainline like department stores. It is places like TJ Maxx, evidently Macy's. Macy's made 61% of its sales from women's apparel, shoes, cosmetics, and accessories. And then, in that same year, TJ Maxx eclipsed Macy's for the very first time. So does that tell us that shoppers simply want a bargain?
I think it tells us that there is that a very specific shopper that is growing called the treasure hunter shopper you may have heard of that really likes that in-store experience of hunting for a bargain. And I think some of this does derive out of what we were talking about earlier about the recession and really value-driven shoppers emerging out of that. Even though they are now more able to probably shop full-line stores, they still like that experience. They've now realized they can get more for their money out of shop like TJ Maxx. So we're seeing TJ Maxx is really one of the only apparel specialists out there that's still growing kind of exponentially at the moment and still opening new stores. And while we're seeing more traditional retail falter a little bit, and interestingly, TJ Maxx doesn't really have an online presence, which I think eventually will bite it in the butt. But right now it seems to be able to function that way.
Less than 30 seconds left here, Dr. Cox.
Sure.
We have retail is the most troubled sector in the economy. It's replaced energy. And it supports 200,000 jobs in America. So if online sales are where we're going, what does that mean for the economy and for jobs?
Well, one, I don't think it means anything negative for the economy.
But all those people will lose their jobs.
Well, all those farmers change their jobs. People simply have to change with how the economy goes. They have to change with where the jobs are. That's what will happen.
Dr. Stephen Cox, professor of marketing at the McCall School of Business at Queens University of Charlotte, Katie Peralta, retail and business reporter from the Charlotte Observer, and I want to thank Tiffany Hogan for joining us from London, where she is senior analyst for Kantar Retail. Thank you all for the